Dunbar.
Hi, this is Dr. Dunbar's iWoofs, the owner-friendly and dog-friendly dog training show to help you understand dog training from the dog's point of view and to learn what you can learn from your dog. So it's hello from me, Dr. Ian Dunbar. Hello from Dune. Hello from Claude. And hello from Ollie. Today we're going to talk about dog fears and quarrels, dogs fighting with other dogs. When owners come to me and they talk about their dog, if he fights with other dogs or if he's on leash, aggressive, they all pretty much say the same thing. They say he fights all the time and he's trying to kill the other dog. However, you know, when we objectively analyze the facts and we sort of go into the dog's history and we go through each fight, each incident, you know, one after the other, in most cases we discover that the dog has been involved in several or many dog fights, but he's yet to put any of his opponents in the veterinary clinic for repair. It's so obvious here, if we step back from our emotions and we analyze what is going on objectively, it's so obvious that if he really is trying to kill the other dog, then he's simply just not very good at it. I mean, on the contrary, he's had 12 attempts, 12 full contact dog fights, and he's yet to harm the other dog. Over and over, the dog has proved, I would say, that he is not a dangerous dog. He doesn't cause damage. Instead, yeah, absolutely, he's out of control. He's obnoxious, he's belligerent, he's bellicose. Or more likely, he lacks the confidence around other dogs because he wasn't given the opportunity to socialize and develop the social savvy for meeting and greeting unfamiliar dogs. And really, in this respect, he's not much different from a lot of people. Who nag and argue a surprising amount of the time, but very, very rarely seriously injure another person. So, or it could be here that, this dog was really well socialized. He went to puppy class. He did two puppy classes. He did puppy one. He did puppy two. He was Mr. Sociable. And then when he was, say, 5.5, 6 months old, he gets into a dog fight. And being that age, most likely the other dog jumped on him. This is what happens with dogs, that basically as they grow up, male dogs especially, of course male dogs have testes which secrete testosterone, which peaks at 18 months. And this is very unusual in the mammalian world. Usually at puberty, testosterone rises and then stays at adult levels, you know, throughout the animal's life. In dogs, it's slightly different. That testosterone levels are very low in puppyhood. They start to increase about 3 months of age, and then they peak at 18 months, and then they decrease to adult levels. So what we have is an 18-month-old dog that has 5 to 7 times the levels of testosterone than an adult dog. These levels of testosterone make the dog smell like hypermale. And, of course, the behavior does likewise. And basically, for hierarchies to work out, developing male dogs and developing female dogs have to learn their place. And what happens here, if a male dog, 6 months old, he goes into a dog park, nearly every adult dog, especially the males, are going to put him in his place. If he has testicles on, then it's a certainty. Basically, it's the equivalent to, say, a 6-month-old or to 18-month-old male dog with testicles is the equivalent to a child, say a boy who's 15 years old, and he goes into a bad neighborhood and he just shouts obscene words and waves a red flag. I mean, that's how obvious and how obnoxious and how stupid, you know, the poor dog is. It's very difficult being a male dog with testicles. Even if we castrate him, certainly we're really going to reduce the number of fights that he's involved in. Although we're not going to change his behavior, you know, that much. But it's going to be a hard time for him. So we are going to have fights. So say at 6 months he's jumped by another dog and immediately the owner thinks, oh boy, my dog's in a dog fight. And it was scary. I mean, even though afterwards no damage was done, yet again, no damage was done. It was scary. It was like, and you think, oh, good Lord, you know, one of those dogs has to be mortally injured. But no, no damage is done. But the owner gets scared, especially owners of large dogs and owners of little dogs. The owners of little dogs think, oh, my word, you know, my dog could have died then. The owner of big dogs thinks, oh, my word, my dog could have really injured the other dog then. And for many little dogs and big dogs, socialization stops right there. It doesn't matter what we've had under our belt with puppy one, puppy two, socialization now stops. And the owner doesn't let the dog play off leash in the dog park, doesn't take him for off leash runs. We walk him on leash. Well, just by putting him on leash, you're going to magnify his behavior. Something like 40-fold, I think, is the difference between animals which are running free and animals which are confined either by a fence, a cage, or a tether. Basically, all of their social behaviors increase about 40-fold. So if they're friendly, they're going to be super friendly. If they lack confidence, they're really going to lack confidence. So now the dog is limited to walking on leash, so the problem's going to be much more obvious. It's like looking at the dog's insecurities under a magnifying glass. And socialization stops. And so every day it gets worse. Until eventually the owner comes to me and says, now I can't walk him at all. Because every time he meets another dog, he gets into a dog fight. Or some kind of on-leash aggression. So I think before, you know, we get too hard on our dogs here, I mean, we should realize, one, this is very normal. If you're a male dog, every other dog is going to jump on you between the ages of 6 months to almost 3 years. You are an incendiary sort of stimulus in the social scene. And depending on the other dogs, how well socialized they are will be the interaction. So if they're really well socialized, the other dogs may just come up and go, boo. And you, as the young male dog, has to show signs of appeasement. If they're not too well socialized, there may be a full contact scrap. And usually, you know, that is pretty much indicative of we are not a top dog. You know, top dogs are usually pretty cool. They're seldom in fights. They seldom growl. They don't need to. They just look at another dog and go, hey, buddy, quit it. And the other dog immediately then says, okay. But it's the sort of middle-ranking male dogs who don't have that confidence that will go up to a puppy and it's like, and, you know, will just get, you know, a little too much on his case. So, one, it's normal. The dogs have to go through this. And then two, I mean, let's just take a human analogy here. Because I think we expect too much from our dogs. That often at seminars, I will survey the people there. And I ask everybody, I say, all right, put up your hands anybody who has never had an argument in their life. And, of course, I mean, no one can put their hand up, right? I mean, if they do, you think, you know, liar, liar, pants on fire. But then I say, all right, put up your hand if you've never lost your temper in your life. And very occasionally, you'll get one person puts their hand up here. That there are people that have actually never lost their temper, which is quite amazing. But no, the rest of the audience, say the other 499 people there, they put their hands up. They've all lost their temper. Then I say, okay, this is a big question. Think very hard. Is there anyone in the room who has never grabbed someone in anger? And here I want you to think sibling growing up, spouse, children. I mean, these are sadly the three most grabbable people. And you only get one or two people that put their hands up. Then I tell them, right, I want you to close your eyes. I don't want you to see the answer to this, but I'm going to ask a question, and if yes, put your hand up, and then I'll say, put your hand down, everyone open your eyes, because I don't want people in the audience seeing who answers yes to this question. And the question is, okay, close your eyes, put your hand up if you have ever hurt someone so badly, intentionally, that they had to be taken to hospital. And you'll get one, maybe two people in the audience put their hand up. This is out of an audience of 500. So then I say, okay, hands down, open your eyes. Well, here's the results of the survey. Every single person in this room has admitted that they're argumentative. Every person but one has admitted that they're argumentative and temperamental. Every person but three has admitted that they're argumentative, temperamental, and prone to physical violence. Yet, only three people in this room have injured someone so badly they had to go to hospital. This is the way we are as people, and dogs are no different. There isn't a dog that can put his paw up to say, I've never had an argument. There isn't a dog that can say, I've never lost my temper, or the equivalent of a human temper. But very few dogs can put their hand up and say, yes, I put another dog in a vet clinic. And this is the way it is. Arguments are normal. Losing tempers are normal. Physical altercations are normal. Causing damage is abnormal. And so what we get when dogs fight is, it sounds pretty ugly, but usually no damage is done. The dog causes no harm. It's really, really important to understand this, because we really do, I think, expect much too much from our dogs. We expect our dog to get along with other dogs and greet dogs that they don't know like they're sort of long-lost friends. No. It's not the way it is. I mean, in no canine social group in the wild at all do we have situations where, say a wolf would come into a wolf pack and say, hey, guys, thought I'd pop in and join your pack for dinner. It would not happen. I mean, he would end up being dinner most probably. Yet we expect our dogs to do that, to meet and greet every dog they see and to do it in a friendly fashion. And we expect them to do it naturally, without any help and training. Well, I got news for you. It's not going to happen unless we train the dogs to do it. And basically, what we have to remember is classical conditioning is in force forever. It's very easy to teach your puppy to greet other dogs. Pretty easy till they're five and a half months of age. By the time they're 6 months old, now there's going to be a few dogs they shy away from, or a few dogs that pick quarrels with them. So from when you start walking your dog on leash, just make sure every time your dog sees another dog, you say, good boy. Why? Because he's being good now. He's not growling. He's not scared. He's being a big boy. He's being very confident, and he's being very friendly. So praise him. Every time he greets another dog or is greeted by another dog, good boy. And when the other dog leaves, give him a piece of kibble. So say, good boy, that's worth a bit of kibble. Yep, so the other dog's out of the way, so we don't, you know, induce any kind of competition between dogs we don't know. We say, good boy, it's worth a bit of kibble. You never stop classically conditioning your dog for greeting other dogs. All right, it's time for a quick break now. I'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
From our home to your speakers, VoiceAmerica.com.
Hello, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar. As a veterinarian and animal behaviorist, people often ask me which toy is best suited for their canine companion. Without hesitation, I have recommended the durable and versatile Classic Kong toy. The Kong toy is known as the original canine treat and food dispenser. Simply stuff a Kong toy with any healthy dog food or treat, and you have the perfect training tool. A foodstuff Kong toy will stimulate your dog mentally, reduce frustration and anxiety, and ensure your dog is chewing on something other than your sofa. Find quality Kong products at pet stores everywhere. Your dog will love you for it.
Want to keep your dog busy with good things to chew? Premier's Busy Buddy treat-holding toys are the answer. Each one is designed to hold a different type of treat, providing hours of entertainment. Squirrel Dude features the patented treat meter, randomly dispensing kibble as your dog plays. The Big Kahuna Football includes the patented treat trapper, ideal for hard biscuits and intense chewing pleasure. Ask for Busy Buddy at your local pet store, veterinarian, or trainer, and be sure to check out all the other great Busy Buddy toys, including Waggle, Bouncy Bone, Tug-a-Jug, and more at Premier.com.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to iWolves with veterinarian and animal behaviorist Dr. Ian Dunbar, the pioneer of lure, reward, fun and games, dog-friendly dog training. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar, and we're back with iWolves. Before the break, we were just talking about classical conditioning. Can't overemphasize it. It doesn't stop. And it's something very few people do. A lot of people do not see the point of congratulating their dog when it sniffed another dog and nothing happens. You've got to. This is the whole point. You know, you cannot, it's unfair to the dog to get upset, you know, when he gets into a woo-woo-woo or, you know, a fight if you have never said thank you for being polite. You always say thank you for a polite greeting. You never take it for granted. If you take it for granted, what's going to happen is you're soon going to end up with a dog that is on leash, has on leash aggression. So every time your dog greets another dog, when nothing happens, good boy, there's a good boy, that's worth a treat. And give him a couple of bits of kibble when the interaction's finished. Even if he is growling, I would still say, there's a good boy. Because with classical conditioning, we're trying to form an association. We are not necessarily reinforcing the dog's behavior. We're trying to associate the appearance of another dog with something pleasant. So I like to, beforehand, before the dogs even get to interact, say, hey, look, over there, there's a dog. Wow, that's a cookie dog. Have a piece of kibble and another piece of kibble. So I like to get this classical conditioning out front before we have the interaction, just in case the interaction goes a little sour. If, however, the interaction is good, then classical conditioning again, and I reward the dog for being good to reinforce his good behavior. Wow, that's really worth a cookie. So, now, let's get objective. We have to, this is a very emotional topic when dogs fight. And owners will get very upset with other owners, you know, of dogs involved in fights. It's so important here, I think, to be objective and to be rational. We have to analyze, it's what I call the fight-bite ratio. And we have to work out the dog's fighting history. How many fights has this dog been involved in? And usually here, in a typical case, is a dog from 6 months to a year old, and he's been involved in half a dozen to 12 fights. And these are full body contact fights. And right away there, I'm thinking, this is a pretty cool prognosis. That I know this dog has pretty good bite inhibition because I'm expecting he's never caused any damage. Anyway, we go through each fight at a time. I say, tell me about the last fight. Tell me about the one before that, the one before that. And I say, tell me about his first fight. Then the second fight, the third fight. Then any fights in between that you remember. Okay, any of these fights, did the victim go to the vet clinic? And the answer I expect is no. The most common fight-bite ratio here for 99% of so-called fighting dogs is they've had 6 to 12 fights. They have never harmed another dog. And again, I just cannot emphasize this so much. If you've ever seen a dog fight, it's a flurry of activity. It's like, wah, 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 and the teeth are gnashing around everywhere. And then when it's over and the dust has settled and we look for injuries and there are none. And this is what it is in the majority of cases. And that, to me, is such clear-cut evidence that this dog was pulling his punches, or at least inhibiting his bites. That the activity is enormous. And so for the dog not to hurt the other dog in this process, especially if he's biting the other dog around his scruff, around the soft part of his neck or his muzzle, which is where dogs should bite, by the way, by the sort of, in the Marquis of Dogsbury fighting rules, all bites should be from the neck forwards, and you don't harm another dog here in that flurry of activity, then boy, do you have a very fine control over your jaws. You have really good bite inhibition. So when we analyze the fight-bite ratio, we got 12 fights, we have zero bites. We have zero trips to the vet clinic. So the bad news here is the dog's fighting, and it's objectionable, it's embarrassing, it's annoying, and we want to do something about it. The good news is the dog causes no harm. This is not a dangerous dog. He's just an obnoxious dog. He's not been trained. He has not been sufficiently classically conditioned around other dogs. He doesn't have, the owner doesn't have sufficient control to sit the dog or lie the dog down in stressful situations. What it means, though, is the prognosis is absolutely brilliant. We can do a lot with this dog to resolve the behavior because the dog is not dangerous. This is just, it's so important. So what can we do? Well, one of the things is you can look around for a growl class. These are sometimes called difficult dog classes, or feisty Fido classes. You know, they all have different names. You can probably find these, APDT.com, the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, and look for a certified pet dog trainer, a CPDT, who's teaching some kind of growl class for dogs that fight but don't cause harm. Now, these classes are just suitable for dogs that don't cause harm. You need a very, you need to have pretty much a one-on-one consultation with a behavior problem counselor if the dog is causing damage. And really the prognosis is very slim. It is, bite inhibition is learned in puppyhood. And though you could actually teach an adult dog bite inhibition towards humans, because we could, say, pad ourselves up in a bite suit and pretend the dog's hurting, and so safely we could teach the dog bite inhibition. We can't do this when the dog hasn't learnt bite inhibition vis-a-vis other dogs and other animals. And it's such an important thing to teach, and it's why dogs should go to puppy class. It's why they should go to the dog park. It's why dogs should play. And it's why we should buy plush toys. To teach dogs bite inhibition. They must know. So we use the plush toy, for example, like it's a real animal. And we pretend it's real. And the dog is meant to treat it really gently, to nose it. It can carry it. It can sleep with it. It can hug it. What it can't do is bite it. And if that squeaky toy squeaks, we go, oh, no, 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 no. Be gentle, be gentle. Totally different from a chew toy or a dental toy or an interactive fetch and tug toy. So we got very different types of toys here. We should understand this because so many people would just give a dog a squeaky toy and the dog destroys it, destroys this plush toy. Well, you're training your dog to really bite something that kind of looks like an animal and squeaks like an animal really hard. It's not good news. The whole point of a plush toy is the dog will keep it for life and sleep with it. And you will use the plush toy to teach the dog to have gentle teeth. Anyway, so you're going to get into a growl class. And usually in growl classes, the dogs are muzzled, even though they've been really vetted that, yeah, they've been in lots of fights, but they've never hurt another dog. And the muzzle is largely for the owner, so the owners are more at ease because they don't need muzzles. Even if a fight broke out, we know the dogs aren't going to hurt each other. And what are we going to learn in a growl class? Well, the first thing is you're going to learn on-leash control around other dogs. You're going to be in a room with, say, eight other dogs that also are very reactive on-leash. It's going to be a very, very stressful environment. I mean, it's the environment is just going to be amazing. The level of like energy there, everyone's going to be on edge. And you're going to learn to control your dog in this environment. So once you've done that, walking your dog again is going to be really simple. Your dog is not going to get upset when he sees another dog because you know you can control him in quite a small room with seven other dogs, which are pretty volatile on leash. So first you're going to learn on leash control. You're going to do oodles of classical conditioning. You're going to hand feed the dog his dinner there, kibble by kibble, in the presence of other dogs. And so that association is going to be made. Like, well, I'm not so keen about other dogs, but I like it when I'm close because I get my dinner then. For some lucky dogs, they will actually learn to be re-socialized and play. That after a while of doing the on-leash stuff, sit your dog, walk your dog, have them pay attention to you, sit your dog, classical conditioning, we then say have the dogs off-leash. maybe do this two at a time, three at a time, four at a time, in a good growl class. They're changing the population every 30 seconds. Right, okay, put your dog on leash, take him out behind the screen so only seven dogs are visible now. Every time you change one dog, you have a completely different population there. We do lots of jolly routines. The dogs get very tense, so you'll find the trainer in a growl class, usually every minute, they say, okay, everybody get your dog to wag his tail. Because most owners, they're like, it's like death in there. It's like an iceberg has been moved in the room. And, of course, the dog will sense this, and that makes the dog uptight. And if the dog's uptight, then, hey, other dogs are going to get uptight just looking at him. I mean, that's one of the biggest stimuli out there when you see another dog that's uptight that's going to get you on edge. So we're going to have the jolly routine, and this was devised by William Campbell. He used to be an industrial psychologist who then turned into a behavior counselor, 30 years ago, and way ahead of his time. And he came up with the jolly routine. Just jump up and down, clap your hands, get your dog to wag his tail. Incredible classical conditioning. And it's going to be a conditioned emotional response. And as if the dog is saying, boy, I don't know what's up with my owner, but they seem to be pretty happy, about this situation. And so the dog is associating the owner's happiness with the presence of the other dogs. So again, it's control, it's classical conditioning that we try and we give the dog lots of treats, we keep doing the jolly routine, we get the dog to wag his tail, and then Kelly Gorman had a lovely variation on this where she trains dogs to lift a paw or play bow. And so she'll put play bow on command, which is no different than telling a dog to sit. So we got beautiful control, but look at the stimulus it's showing to the other dogs. Now the dogs see, wow, that dog, he's kind of cool. Well, he wants to play. He's in a play bow. And has a tremendous calming influence on the other dogs. And when you get back to the street in like a one-on-one situation, and another dog's coming up to your dog, and he's a little stiff maybe, you tell your dog, okay, bow. And of course he's bowing, looking at you with his butt to the other dog. And in the dog world, it's so difficult to pick a fight with a dog's rear end. It's just one of the biggest calming stimuli there is. The other dog sees this dog's butt and thinks, oh, well, perhaps, they don't want to fight. So anyway, it's now time for another break. I'm going to be back in a couple of minutes.
Conversation at a click of a mouse. VoiceAmerica.com.
Do you want to keep your dog busy with good things to chew? Check out the newest products in Premier's Busy Buddy line. The Bouncy Bone combines rubber, durable nylon, and replaceable rawhide rings for extended playtime pleasure. Fill Tugger Jug with treats or kibble, and your dog will be regularly rewarded while playing fetch or tug or just rolling it around on his own. Ask for Busy Buddy at your local pet store, veterinarian, or trainer. And be sure to check out all the other great Busy Buddy toys, including Waggle, Twist and Treat, Squirrel Dude, and more at Premier.com.
Looking for the world's most versatile and durable dog toy? The Kong Company established the standard for dog toy performance and durability. The legendary red rubber Kong toy is recommended by the world's top veterinarians and dog trainers. A treat-stuffed Kong toy is the training tool of choice for addressing numerous behavioral challenges, including destructive chewing, excessive barking, and separation anxiety. Kong toys are available at pet stores worldwide. Get your Kong today. Your dog will love you for it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to iWolves with veterinarian and animal behaviorist Dr. Ian Dunbar, the pioneer of lure, reward, fun and games, dog-friendly dog training. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar, and I'm back with iWolves. Before the break, we were just talking about putting friendly behaviors, paw raise or a play bow on cue. This is just a wonderful thing to do to defuse potentially dodgy situations. And, of course, it's brilliant because as you ask a dog to play bow, he is looking at you. So two things here. One, it's a stimulus blocker. He doesn't see the other dog, so he can't get, amped up by the other dog. Instead, he's looking at you, but then he's presenting his raised butt wagging in the air to the other dog. And that's a real calming cue. It's very difficult to pick a fight with a dog's butt. So let's just say a couple of things about castration, because it does have a big effect here on fighting. That, as I said before, behavioral endocrinology of dogs is different from any other mammal. In most mammals, testosterone in males, is low. When they're youngsters, it rises in puberty and stays up at much higher adult levels. In dogs, it's low in puppyhood, peaks at 18 months, and then goes down to very low adult levels. In most mammals, if you castrate males, all of the sort of obnoxious secondary sexual characteristics, including aggression, disappear. Not so in dogs. Castration in dogs has no effect on their behavior whatsoever. If you have a belligerent dog, you castrate him, he's still belligerent. The only way to make him friendly is to train him to be friendly. Classical conditioning and operant conditioning, get some control on him. However, what castration does do is it has an enormous effect on the behavior of other dogs. So, for example, if you go in a dog park and your puppy has, or say your six-month-old dog, call him Red, he has testicles, so he has oodles of testosterone. Another male dog, Rover, comes up and goes, "I smell adolescent male." I mean, that's the immediate response, that we smell that testosterone. We know the age of the dog because of the level of the testosterone. And it basically says this is an adolescent male. He needs to be taught a lesson right away. But if we take Red off to the vet and we get him castrated and then we go to the dog park, we have a totally different interaction. Now, remember here, let's say we don't go to the dog park, we meet on leash. This is even more complicated because we have two dogs and then we have two owners and they're all going to get upset. Like previously they came together and Rovers went, "Oh, there's Red, he has testosterone." Grr. So then Red thinks, "Oh no, there's an adult male dog who's growling at me." Grr. Then the Red's owner tightens the leash and then Rover's owner sees, "Oh no, there's someone with a tightened leash with a growly dog." They tighten the leash and bum, 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 we have this vicious circle. And it's just like, it's going to blow any moment. Of course the dogs have a fight. I mean, the level of energy is just enormous. So now we castrate Red. And we go on the street again, and Rover's coming down the street. Red sees him and thinks, "Oh no, here comes Rover." He gets a little apprehensive. Rover's owner just tightens on the leash. Red's owner tightens on the leash just a little. Rover is coming down the other side of the street and says, "Oh, there's Red. Oh, wait a minute. That's not Red. God, that must be Red's sister. I didn't know Red had a sister. That must be Ruby. Hey, Ruby baby, how are you?" And instantly, Rover's demeanor changes. Instead of going, "Oh, that's Red with testes and testosterone," he now goes, "Hey, Ruby baby, how you doing? Hey, you want to hang out?" And he goes up and it's at a gambling gate and his body's all moving and he's wiggly and loose. And so Rover's owner think, "Boy, Rover's in a good mood today." And she whew, thank goodness. And she gets relieved and gets a little loose. Then over here, Red's owner is thinking, "Oh, thank goodness Rover looks relaxed today." Because Red can't believe it, thinking, "What's up with Rover?" But he's happy. Woo, woo, woo. Hey, he gets the wiggly too. And all of a sudden, we don't have an incident. But this is not because the castration has made Red less aggressive. It's because the castration has made Red less of a target. And so now other dogs, including Rover, don't react towards him. So if you've got a male dog, he's in lots of fights, you know, castration is a really good option. And again, another difference between dogs and other mammalian species, when we castrate dogs, it just doesn't affect the rest of their personality. You've got the same dog. You know, in other animals, in horses, in elephants, you know, grizzly bears, when you castrate them, yeah, it does affect their personality. And, of course, has a huge effect on aggressiveness. It makes them much less aggressive. But here, dogs are absolutely unique. Male dogs and female dogs, too, their reproductive endocrinology is absolutely unique. But, we won't be talking about that today. Let's talk about ambiguous cues. That it's a huge difference between the dog's, you know, intentions, his motives, his temperament, and his behavior. And I always tell people, stick to the dog's behavior. But, you know, there's times when the dog's behavior doesn't accurately mirror the dog's intentions. We have some ambiguous cues. You know, usually for the most part, we can observe the dog's behavior and we can quantify and these are facts. We can state facts about what the dog did. The dog barked 5 times. The dog was in a dogfight that lasted 15 seconds, but no damage was done. I mean, these are absolute facts. But we can only hazard a guess as to, say, the dog's intentions or motives or, you know, why the dog is doing it. Sometimes the behavior doesn't accurately mirror what we would think. And so I guess as humans we say, oh, the behavior's ambiguous. I mean, obviously to dogs it's totally clear. But we are not as good at observing dog behavior as, say, other dogs are. Yeah, and not to say that, you know, it's duplicity that the dog is trying to, you know, lie to us. No, duplicity is a quintessential human foible. Rather, it's just that many dog body postures and vocalizations simply have a variety of meanings. For example, a growl could be a threat, may signify frustration, fear, lack of confidence, learned helplessness. Or it could be a solicitation to play. And as such, it may be learned. All of my Malamutes, the way they ask to play is they would say, "Whoa." And that means, hey, I want to play. And during the play, they would go, "Boo." And they would growl in a way that spectrographically is indistinguishable from a real growl, a play growl, who knows? And so sometimes it's really difficult to work it out, and I've got some tips for you, you know, how to do this. So some dogs will growl, you know, as a signal to be petted. Once I had a Rotty, I remember, it was a client's, I was stroking it, and when I stopped stroking him, he growled. So he was growling to make me not stop stroking him. That was a little disturbing. On the other hand, characteristically friendly behaviors can have alternative, unfriendly interpretations too. That, you know, a dog can bare his teeth. It can be a submissive grin. It can be a threat. A dog can paw you as a sign of friendly appeasement. Or he can put his paw on you, usually with a straightened forearm, as a threat. A dog can sidle up to you for company, or he can lean against you, and this can be a spatial, it's a ranking maneuver. And he's saying, hey, I want you to move. A dog can bring you a present. He brings back your retrieval toy, or he can proffer a gift as a test, like he drops his bone or his pig's ear in front of you, and he's just checking to see if you dare touch it and take it away. You know, hopefully, of course, you've done all this in puppy class. Take the object, thank you. Here's 3 liver treats. Now you have the object back. You know, off, take it, thank you. Simply, you know, tail wags. I mean, we all know tail wags are meant to be friendly, right? Well, you know, not always. Certainly a high-frequency, large amplitude wag is sort of augurs well for a happy social encounter. That dog is usually, I think, going to be pretty friendly. But dogs will often wag their tail furiously when barking and lunging at other dogs. And then a large amplitude, slow frequency, sort of cat-like tail swish. Usually this means this dog is really cautious and he really doesn't like you. And a high frequency, sort of small amplitude vibration, you know, like terrier tail, you know, where you want to grab their sort of front paws and hind paws and use their tail as a buzzsaw. I mean, this means the dog is very tense and he's about to blow. So you have to sometimes ask questions, is the dog playing or is he fighting? And in play sessions, they growl, they bite. It looks like some dogs are being bullied. So we want to look for atmosphere cues. And this is kind of like the dog's way of saying, look, I'm just playing, right? And then he goes, "Boo!" and he pretends. It's like me now if I just said, look, the next thing's a joke, and I went, that you would know, no, I was just pretending. I'm not screaming, I'm not dying, I'm not falling off my stool. And the dog's atmosphere cues are a bent elbow, he'll raise a paw, he'll paw, or play bow. His tongue comes out, whether it's like Labrador lolling tongue, you know, or it's like lizard tongue. The tongue is just pushed out between the incisors. And then the third cue we look for is weight shifting or butt wagging. The dog is rapidly shifting weight from the two front paws, and his butt is wagging his tail. Typical sort of pit bull friendliness. And we look for these friendly cues, these atmosphere cues, which say, look, the rest of this stuff is in jest. We're just playing. And I actually count them, and I'll work out the friendly quotient per minute. And with a typical sort of playful pit, I mean, you're going to have a score of like 60 friendly behaviors per minute. Nope, that dog is friendly. He's playing. He may be too physical, and the other dogs may not like it. We may have to tune him down a little. But no, he's playing. And this is, it's really important because so many people, when they observe dogs playing, if anything bad happens, like one dog yelps, one dog runs away, immediately think, oh my God, the dog's being bullied. The dog doesn't like it. And they freak out. If they hear a growl, they think the dog's being aggressive. And they really misinterpret the growl. And so one of the little tricks I do is when I'm educating people about dog behavior, I have them watch a piece, and then I turn down the volume, have them watch it again. And when you take away the growls, all they see are the paw raises and the play bows. Well, it's time for another little break. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
From our home to your speakers, VoiceAmerica.com.
Kong Dog Toys are praised by owners and trainers alike for quality, versatility, and durability. The world's top veterinarians have recommended the original Kong toy for over 30 years. Kong has become the training tool of choice for addressing numerous behavioral challenges, including destructive chewing, excessive barking, and separation anxiety. The key to successful Kong training is to insert healthy dog food or treats into the Kong toy to entice your dog. Look no further than Kong's Stuff and Brand Dog Treats, perfectly designed to fit Kong toys. Available wherever pet supplies are sold. Your dog will love you for it.
Walk with me and put an end to frustrating leash pulling, lunging, and jumping forever. Premier's Gentle Leader Head Collar has been delivering immediate, gentle control for years and has long been the number one recommended head collar endorsed by vets and trainers. Dogs love it because the unique design doesn't choke and eliminates any pressure on their throat. Pet owners love the Gentle Leader because it allows them to enjoy comfortable walks and a more satisfying relationship with their pet. Want to join the millions of dog owners that have found the secret to stress-free walks? Ask about Gentle Leader at your vet, trainer, or pet retailer.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to iWolves with veterinarian and animal behaviorist Dr. Ian Dunbar, the pioneer of lure, reward, fun and games, dog-friendly dog training. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar, and I'm back with iWolves. And before the break, we were talking about, so is he playing or is he fighting? How can we tell? We look for these atmosphere cues. Three really important cues to look for. A bent elbow. It's so diagnostic. It's so indicative. How many times is the dog bending his elbow? Because if it's for real, he's going to be very stiff-legged. He's going to be still. He's going to be moving with a stiff gait. Very different from the bent elbow dog with his tongue sticking out and weight shifting from front paws. This is a friendly dog. And so what we look for is if something weird happens, one dog chases another in a play session, and we think, is that play or is it for real? What happened right prior to this so-called attack, to the growl? Because the growl and the attack are indistinguishable. We've got to remember that in play, all of the behaviors in the dog's behavior repertoire are going to come out totally, totally out of context. The dog will growl and then he'll hump. You know, all of the behaviors, social behaviors, aggressive behaviors, sexual behaviors, friendly behaviors, all get mixed up together. And that's what play is all about. It's sorting out this stuff and developing the social savvy for, like, sophisticated canine meeting and greeting. There's one great way you can check if you think a dog is being bullied, is just take hold of the supposed bully. And usually in class, I do this without telling anyone. I'll just kneel down and take hold of the collie of the bully. and we see what happens. You know what? 9 times out of 10, the dog we thought was being bullied comes running up saying, what are you doing? Hey, play with me, chase me. And then I tell people, hey, look at this. You know, we thought this dog was bullying the other one. Obviously not. I've taken hold of the so-called bully, so he can't move. And now the dog we thought was being bullied has come up and saying, will you play with me, please? So we know it's play, because the dog that was being bullied could have remained hiding. It didn't. And we call this the tether test. It's a very, very indicative test. If you want to learn about two dogs, just put one of them on leash and see what the other one does. Does he visit? We did a lovely study on this where we tethered 6 dogs, and it depended on the test. In one test, say, we tethered 6 males in a great big sort of acre enclosure. And then we would put out a female dog and see who she visited. And what we found was, you know what? Dogs have best friends, that they say hi to each dog, but they spend their time sitting next to their best friends, and that these social friendships persist for years. And we found that the social friendships had nothing to do with the dog's preferred sexual partners. So they had different sexual preferences to their social preferences. Now, usually people, when they're talking about aggression, they say, you know, he's perfectly fine on leash, and he loves large dogs, and he's perfectly fine with Chauncey, the miniature poodle he lives with. In fact, Chauncey is the top dog in the pack and bosses Bubbles around. And he's really brilliant when my son walks him, but. And eventually we get this but. And the but means I can't walk him on leash without him getting into a fight, and so I don't walk him anymore. And this is often what happens. So let's look into this. Let's see this from the dog's point of view. See what Grasshopper has to say. Theo, O wise Akita, the other day I was attacked by another dog, and my owner didn't help. She just whimpered in a squeaky voice, like, oh, 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 oh. And when the other dog eventually let up and the fight ended, she grabbed me and shouted, you bad, bad, bad dog. How do I interpret her strange behavior, Sensei? Does she want me to continue fighting? No, I don't think so, Grasshopper. I think she was just upset because you were attacked. But she didn't know what to do. So when she knew you were safe, and she just let go of her emotions. It would have been much better if she had screamed, ah! When you were being attacked, or sit, 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 and then hugged you and said, oh, my poor baby, when the fight stopped. But she was just being emotional, so she got her feedback the wrong way round. She really is a good owner, though. Yes, Sensei, I know. My owner is absolutely wonderful. Actually, she's got a brilliant temperament, really good breeding. She's perfectly fine when she's off leash. And, you know, she really loves big dogs. And she's so gentle with the miniature Dachshund next door. But, you know, she cannot be trusted around other dogs when she's on leash. She just goes ballistic. And then she takes it out on me and yanks the leash and shouts. It's just so really upsetting. Really, Grasshopper? Yes, Sensei. And it's just, well, it's embarrassing. I always have to warn the other dogs to keep away from her. Like, you know, I say, stay back, stay back. She's unstable. She can't be trusted. She sounds really disturbed, Grasshopper. Maybe she should get help. Yes, I think so too. But now, of course, I don't want to go walking with her at all, because it's all so stressful. We can't go anywhere without her getting into a fight. You know, Grasshopper, don't be too harsh on your owner. It must be very scary to see dogs growl and lunge and fight. I think perhaps her behavior has negatively, classically conditioned you towards other dogs. What do you mean, Sensei? Well, you've begun to associate other dogs approaching the two of you with your owner's emotional outbursts. So you too, are becoming emotional whenever other dogs approach. I think you're right, Sensei. Yes, Grasshopper, I think I am right. But is there hope, any hope for my owner and for me and for my walks? Yes, there is, Grasshopper. Suggest that she carry a bag of treats on the next walk. Whenever she sees another dog, to say, look, Grasshopper, there's a cookie dog, and then give you a couple of treats, then to kiss you and say how much she loves you. The display of gentle affection will help her keep calm, and the treats will help you form positive associations with other dogs approaching. It sounds like it will be fun, Sensei. Yes, Grasshopper, it will be fun for both of you. Thank you so much, Sensei. Thank you, Grasshopper. Be calm. So the classical conditioning is really important. And basically, it's really strange what we say about our dogs. The dogs would probably, if interviewed, say about us that now whenever another dog appears, the owner gets all tense and crazy. And this has an effect on your dog's behavior. So now your dog is negatively classically conditioned to dogs. We have to reverse this process and we have to undo it. And it's very simple. From now on, your dog eat outside. Go and sit on a park bench. Whenever you see another dog, say, look, cookie dog, and feed your dog. Tell it how much you love it. What can we learn from all this? I think reactivity makes it worse. Don't argue back. Don't react to reactivity. Be calm. Be happy. Jolly routine. With classical conditioning, you know, to defuse any situation, smile and laugh. Helps defuse human situations too. Well, maybe not smiling, let me make it go worse. But laughing does, because people think it's weird if all of a sudden you... That's too funny. I got to get out of here. Very few people are going to respond negatively to that. They're just going to look on in amazement. For 7 years, I used to deal with dogs biting people. And, you know, it's hard to be calm, be happy when you know the dog's going to bite you. So I used to recite nonsense poetry. And I was confronted by a dog. I remember an Akita once who was muzzled, and he just flipped his muzzle off. The owner hadn't tied it to his collar. And so I was reciting, "The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea-green boat. Tossed some kibble. He took some money and plenty of honey. Liver, liver, liver." And by reciting the poetry, it enabled me to keep calm. So keep calm, sing, talk to your dog. Classical conditioning, never ever take a good greeting for granted. If your dog sees another dog, praise him. If your dog greets another dog, praise him. And then you won't have a dog that's on leash aggressive. You have been listening to Dr. Dunbar's iWoofs, the owner-friendly and dog-friendly dog training show to help you understand dog training from the dog's point of view and to learn what you can learn from your dog. iWoofs is sponsored by Premier Pet Products and by The Kong Company. So it's goodbye from me, Dr. Ian Dunbar. Goodbye from Dune. Goodbye from Claude. And goodbye from Ollie.